program, as you know, much of this program, which we can adopt next week, Tuesday, remind me in Kuala Lumpur formally, have a look at the program. It revolves around the budget. You know, there's a standard 14 two-week process where we work with the NA committee. So, you know, there's a whole chunk taken up by that. It will be with this bill and any other oversight responsibilities that flow from our program as it ended last year. So we can discuss the program next week. But for now, are there any questions about today? Nope. Okay. So can I ask for a mover and a seconder for who would chair the meeting, please? Hello?
I move, Chair.
Okay, Dikilani moves. A seconder, please.
Yeah, why not, Eunice? Good morning. Good morning, colleagues. I don't mind, Chair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, otherwise we'll have to run around looking for people. Thanks, Dennis. Welcome back as well. Okay, I'll be around for the 5 minutes. Sorry, yes, do you want to raise anything?
I said I would have accepted a nomination as well, but no problem today.
You know, carried out a coup. Okay, and nationalize the auditing profession. Look, the other thing, comrades, colleagues, we have to raise today. Look, the officials have to respond to this, colleagues. I forgot to mention this. But we got through the media knowledge that the minister has disbanded the IRBA board. It seems that there's some unhappiness with the CEO, I think, the new CEO, and or board members. And at some stage or the other, the department, the National Treasury officials need to explain to us what's going on there. Because, colleagues, for those of you who have not been around, Dikilani will confirm, we had repeatedly international reports from the appropriate international authorities to credit South Africa, astonishingly, despite all the wrongdoing that occurs here, with the high auditing standards we have. And IRBA was highly regarded globally. So this is quite a clampdown. And one's worried. So hopefully, the Comrade Njadu, you will steer a discussion around that so that we get some knowledge, either today or the next meeting that we start discussing the bill. We need to know what is happening there because it's very, very disappointing. Dikilani will confirm to you and your colleagues, Dennis, on the NA side, not the Mazambani is the only one left, I think. You can ask him. I mean, we constantly had, you know, the IRBA acknowledged for its role in maintaining excellent auditing standards. Of course, the practice was different. So, colleagues, you know that the committee in the last term was fully behind these amendments to ensure that IRBA has more power to sanction people and more power to investigate because too many auditing firms here and globally were having a field day in not abiding by the auditing standards and companies were running riot, so to speak. Many of these are international companies and, you know, in the UK and elsewhere, they began, I think the US also and in the way in Europe, I think they all began tightening the laws that applied to auditors and giving more power to the equivalent of our IRBA, you know, the auditing associations to act more decisively against wrongdoing by auditors. Okay, so I'll leave it at that, Comrade Njadu. I'll stick around for 5 minutes and hand over to you. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Compliments for 2021 year, and everybody once more welcome. Thank you very much, Chair. As the acting chairperson of this meeting, I think we will immediately go to the business of the day, where we will invite National Treasury so that we get on to the business of today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, and Welcome, and thank you for observing the minute of silence. As well as the National Treasury, we also lost a few loved ones and colleagues, so I share your sentiments. Today we're here. I would like to introduce my colleagues. It is Advocate MP van Schoor and Advocate Elwe Malawutsi who will be leading the presentation. And those colleagues are from our legal division in National Treasury side. And then we've also got Gillian Bailey here from the Airbus side, Director of Investigations. But I'll hand over to them to lead us straight into the presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We can continue.
Good morning, Acting Chairperson and other committee members. Can someone from the Secretariat load the presentation, please? Thank you very much. So I'll start the presentation. So we will maybe to the next slide, please. The presentation, we will briefly deal with the background to the bill and then deal with the overview of the amendments in the bill. And then also we will deal with the public submissions to the National Assembly Standing Committee on Finance and the responses of National Treasury and IRBA. I also want to indicate that what we circulated to the committee was the presentation and then also obviously the bill that was passed by the National Assembly. And then we also prepared the text of the Audit Profession Act showing all the amendments that the National Assembly made. So it made it easier to read the Act with those amendments. Next slide, please. Now, just briefly, the Auditing Profession Act of 2005, it established the IRBA as the regulator of auditors and also candidate auditors, and it also regulates their registration, as well as the education, training, and professional development. An important part of the IRBA's role is to promote the integrity of the auditing profession by, amongst others, investigating alleged improper conduct, and also to conduct disciplinary hearings and imposing sanctions for improper conduct. Now, the bill before Parliament proposes amendments to the Profession Act of 2005 to address challenges and limitations that the IRBA faces in discharging its regulatory and oversight responsibilities, especially in light of recent and grave audit failures in both public and private institutions. Next slide, please. Now, the chairperson referred to this in his introduction is that during the processing of the Financial Matters Amendment Bill, the National Assembly's Standing Committee of Finance decided on 7 March 2019 not to proceed with amendments to the Act at the time, since it was not possible to process it in the very short space of time prior to the end of the fifth term of Parliament. So therefore, the Financial Matters Amendment Bill were processed without these amendments. It amended other acts as well, but those amendments were considered and passed into law and has since been sent to by the President. And just to indicate in terms of the public consultation process that the Executive conducted, this Financial Matters Amendment Bill that was before the previous Parliament, the stakeholders did raise concerns in their public submissions regarding the proposed search and seizure provisions. And at the time, the Standing Committee on Finance of the National Assembly requested Treasury to engage these audit firms on these provisions. But at the end of the day, we didn't include those amendments or didn't conclude that process since the committee decided not to proceed with the amendments to the Auditing Profession Act. Next slide, please. Can I just a bit higher, please? So we just want to make it clear that the amendments that what was tabled in February last year in the Autumn Profession Amendment Bill are exactly the same as those that were in the Financial Matters Amendment Bill. So we didn't include any of the discussions or the outcome of discussions that we had with the audit firms. In any event, it was not concluded at the time. Now, following the public submissions and hearings on this bill, conducted by the National Assembly of the Standing Committee, this is now the sixth parliament, Treasury and the IRBA consulted SAICA, and those audit firms that made submissions, and we consulted them on certain key issues, not on all aspects of the bill. We then submitted to the Standing Committee of Finance a comment matrix that contains all the submissions made to the committee, which include from other stakeholders, individuals, as well as from COSATU, if I remember correctly. And we then proposed amendments in response to some of those submissions. Others we indicated reasons why we're not supporting those submissions. And then we also proposed certain technical refinements. Now, some of the comments that were received during the process before the Standing Committee on Finance, we proposed that should be part of a future review of the Act. And I'm just mentioning two in particular, which are main issues that were raised by some of the stakeholders, and that is to expand the scope of the Audit Profession Act to include accountants, because currently it only deals with auditors and candidate auditors. And then also the proposal that we should provide for in the Act itself for the mandatory rotation rule of auditors. And currently this is a rule that was issued by the IRBA, so it is binding. But the proposal was that it should be included in the Act itself, so that it becomes part of the primary legislation. Our submission to the Standing Committee of Finance was that there are important proposed areas in the amendment bill that should be considered as soon as possible and finalized in order to strengthen the governance of the IRBA, as in particular the board. And then secondly, and I think that is one of the main areas of amendments, to improve the investigating disciplinary processes of the IRBA in order to deal with improper conduct by auditors and candidate auditors. And just lastly from my side, is that the bill with amendments, it would be aware, was adopted by the National in the Standing Committee of Finance on 18 November last year, and then it was passed by the National Assembly on the 2nd of December. I'll hand it over to my colleague Elwe, that will take you through an overview of the amendments, and then also, as the chairperson indicated at the beginning, to indicate the amendments that were made following the public submissions by the Standing Committee of Finance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, MP, and good morning to honourable members, and thanks again to the acting chairperson for the opportunity. As MP indicated, I am going to deal with the parts that are left in the presentation, starting with the overview of amendments, and then later on I'll deal with the public submissions and responses by National Treasury and IRBA, and also indicate what are those amendments that were made or proposed to the National Assembly. So with regard to the overview of amendments, it is important to note that the Auditing Profession Amendment Bill proposes amendments to the Auditing Profession Act in order to strengthen the governance of the Independent Regulatory Board for Auditors, and furthermore to also strengthen the investigating and disciplinary processes, and also to provide for the power to enter and search premises, and also for the power to subpoena persons with information that may be required for an investigation process. It's also further to provide for the minister with the power to determine the maximum monetary fines in instances where an auditor has been found guilty and a sanction of a fine has been imposed. And furthermore, the bill also provides for offences relating to investigation and disciplinary processes, And finally, it provides for the protection and the sharing of information. Next slide, please. As part of strengthening the governance of the board, the bill ensures that, in order to ensure that EREBA performs its functions within a defined strategy, EREBA is now given the power to determine, with the minister's approval, a regulatory strategy, which the bill also proposes that it must be published. And furthermore, to strengthen EREBA's independence and address the issue of conflict of interest of board members, the bill provides for the exclusion of auditors from appointment as board members, but it provides for the audit expertise through the two formally registered auditors, and also it provides for the two legally qualified persons be appointed as members of the board. The bill also prohibits board members from sharing directly or indirectly in any profits of or interests of registered auditors or persons related to the registered auditor, and also prohibits board members from receiving any payments, but excluding pension benefits from registered auditors. And this is all proposed in order to try and deal with issues of conflict of interest amongst by board members. The term of board members is also proposed to be increased from 2 to 3 years, and that you'd find under clause 4 to 5. Next slide, please. With regard to the bill, also tries to or attempts or makes effort to strengthen the investigating committee and its processes, and it provides that the investigating committee, when investigating conduct by registered auditors and credit auditors, it must be independent of the auditing profession. And the bill provides for the committee to include two formally registered auditors and an advocate or attorney. And the bill also makes provision for disqualification of members of the board regarding the sharing of in profits or interests of or receiving payments from registered auditors. And the same requirement is also proposed for members of the investigating committee. So the same standard will apply to members of the investigating committee, in that they will be barred from sharing in any profits or interests or receiving payments from registered auditors. Next slide, please. With regard to the disciplinary process and the role of the investment committee, currently the disciplinary committee is, as we all know, is overburdened by a number of disciplinary cases. And in order to alleviate this burden on the committee, there is provision proposing the bill which enables EREBA to appoint as many members of the disciplinary committee as it considers appropriate, and to also allow that a panel be appointed from these members to hear every hearing. So what it means is that a pool of members will be appointed into a disciplinary committee, but whenever there is a disciplinary hearing, a panel, a specific panel will be appointed to hear that specific hearing. And as I indicated earlier, this is done in order to alleviate the burden that currently exists, or that currently faces the disciplinary committee. And it's also proposed that the disciplinary committee should be chaired by a retired judge or a senior counsel, and that a panel should include at least 3 persons. And very importantly, is that a specific panel will be chaired by a member of the committee who is either an advocate or an attorney. And the panel must, at all given time, also have a member who is a formally registered auditor. Next slide, please. The requirement on the disqualification of sharing of profits or interest with a registered auditor, this also applies to members of the investigating committee, which means these members of the investigating committee are also proposing the bill that they are also prohibited from sharing in any profits or receiving any payments from a registered auditor. also the prohibition on using, there's also prohibition on members of the committee from improperly benefiting themselves or someone else, but they're also prohibited from impeding the committee's work. And further to alleviate the burden on the disciplinary committee, the bill provides for the establishment of an enforcement committee, which will have the power to deal with recommendations made by the investigating committee. So it means that once the investigation has been done and the investigating committee has made recommendations, so it will be incumbent on the investment committee that then deal with those recommendations in terms of what next steps should be. Next slide, please. The next slide deals with the registration requirements for auditors. The bill proposes an amendment that membership of an accredited professional body will be a prerequisite for anyone to qualify for registration as an auditor or candidate auditor. Next slide, please. With regard to the reporting of irregularities by auditors, as you all know, given the responsibility that these auditors have to report irregularities to EDMA, it's always a risk that they may be removed before they actually complete this reporting. So therefore, the bill then proposes a prohibition on the removal of a registered auditor before that auditor completes the process of reporting an irregularity to EDMA, and also proposes further that where an individual registered auditor has reported an irregularity and he or she resigns from the firm before complying with the relevant section that deals with the reporting of irregularity, that auditor must do the necessary handover to the incoming auditor regardless of when the resignation takes effect. So this is also to make sure that the process of reporting an irregularity is not left hanging just because an auditor has left a particular firm. Next slide, please. The bill also enables the enforcement committee to refer what is called a non-audit matter, which has been brought against a registered auditor, the relevant professional body, for investigation and disciplinary proceedings where necessary. The non-audit matter to be referred to a professional body by the enforcement committee must actually fall within the constitution and the rules of that professional body for that professional body to be able to deal with such a non-audit matter that would have been referred to it by the enforcement committee. Next slide. This one deals with the attempts or efforts to enhance the investigating processes. For an investigation into an alleged improper conduct auditors to be thorough and effective, it is very important to expand the powers of the investigating committee. Therefore, the power to subpoena documents is of critical importance in the work of the investigating committee, and it's also a necessary mechanism that is required in order to obtain evidence. So an amendment is therefore proposed that would empower the investigating committee subpoena an auditor or another person to submit information or documents that concern a specific investigation. And for purposes of conducting a thorough investigation into an alleged improper conduct by an auditor, in some instances, it may be necessary that such an investigator gains access to the premises of the firm or individual auditor that is under investigation. And for that, the bill makes provision for the power to enter and search premises. And this will only be allowed where there is consent by the affected firm or auditor, or where a search warrant has been issued either by a judge or a magistrate. So the bill also makes provision that when exercising this power of entry and search, the power must be exercised with a strict regard to the constitutional rights, as well as decency and good order. Next one, please. part of enhancing the disciplinary process. Once an investigation into an alleged improper conduct has been completed, there are different processes that are proposed in the bill in order to expedite these disciplinary processes. So the bill proposes that if an investigation indicates that sufficient grounds exist for an auditor to be charged for improper conduct, the process referred to as we may either follow what we refer to as an admission of guilt process, which is a process that will be undertaken by the enforcement committee, or it may be decided that this matter should be referred to the disciplinary committee for a hearing. And where a matter has been referred to a disciplinary committee for a hearing, as I indicated earlier, then a panel will be appointed for that particular case, instead of the disciplinary committee having to deal with all cases. As I indicated, this is proposed in order to deal with the number of cases that the disciplinary committee currently has to deal with. Next slide. The Act currently empowers the disciplinary committee to impose a fine not exceeding an amount calculated according to the ratio of 5 years imprisonment, which is prescribed in terms of the Adjustments Fines Act of 1991, on a registered auditor who is found guilty following a disciplinary hearing. We are of the view that the fines which have been determined in terms of this act are too low and do not serve as an adequate deterrent. When an admission of guilt process is followed, the bill now proposes sanctions which may be imposed by the enforcement committee, and these are: an auditor has been found guilty may either be cautioned or reprimanded, or there's also an amendment that the imposition of a fine may be imposed, which fine may not exceed an amount that would have been determined by the minister on the recommendation of ERPA. And I must indicate at this stage that this is one of the amendments that are being proposed in the bill. And another sanction that may be imposed is that the affected auditor may be referred for the necessary training. For the sanctions to be imposed following a disciplinary hearing, which would include the same sanctions that the enforcement committee may impose. But in addition to those sanctions that I've mentioned above, where a disciplinary process has been followed, the outcome of a disciplinary hearing may actually decide that or impose a sanction of cancellation of a registration or disqualify a member, a registered auditor from registration, either on a temporary basis or on a permanent basis. Next one. In straight that improper conduct by auditors will not be tolerated, the bill proposes amendments which make it an offence for an auditor who fails to comply with a subpoena, or an auditor who interferes with or hinders the work or the conduct of an investigation. Therefore, it is proposed that if a person is found guilty of this offence, he or she may be liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or to both such fine and imprisonment. And in order to safeguard the information obtained during the performance of functions in terms of this act, the bill proposes a prohibition on the disclosure of information, except among others, where such disclosure is required by other legislation, or where such disclosure is for purposes of referring a non-audit matter. As you would recall that I did indicate that the enforcement committee would also have is also proposed to be given a power to be able to refer non-audit matters to an accredited professional body. Next slide, please. So that basically concludes the overview of the bill as passed by the National Assembly. So what I'm going to deal with now is to indicate the key issues, to indicate to the committee the key issues that were raised in the public submissions that were made to the Standing Committee on Finance of of the National Assembly. So in a nutshell, the issues related to governance matters, there were issues or concerns raised regarding the disciplinary committee and its panels. And there were also issues raised regarding the referral of non-audit matters. Provision that deals with search and seizure powers. There was also issues raised regarding the sanctions, especially the determination of a maximum fine. And I'll indicate what the concern was or the proposal was. And then there were also issues regarding the reconsideration of this made by ERBA. And lastly, we also received concerns or submissions on the protection and disclosure of information. As to the governance matters, the issue raised by the stakeholders related to the composition of the board. And the proposal or the comment was that the bill must include a provision that allows for inclusion of currently registered auditors on the board. And also, there was also a proposal that we should increase or make provision for increase of legal representation in the board. The response from the National Treasury and ERBA is that including currently registered auditors on the board may impede ERBA's independence and also result in ERBA's membership with the IFRA being withdrawn. And as part of addressing that comment, we then proposed an amendment which is aimed at increasing the number of formally registered auditors and legally qualified auditors or persons from one to two. So what you'd find in the bill that was passed by the National Assembly, find a provision that now increases the representation of formally registered auditors and legally qualified persons to two. Next slide, please. We did indicate in the previous slides that regarding the prohibition of members of the board and members of other committees from sharing of profits or interests with a registered auditor. So what we then received as a comment was that we should actually also include a part that also prohibits the sharing of these profits or interests with not only with registered auditors, but also with any person that is related to the registered auditor. And we, as a National Treasury and ERBA, we basically support that proposal. And an amendment has been effected into the bill, which basically indicate our support. And as you can see, that sub-clause 8 there and 9 do talk to the inclusion of that comment in terms of prohibition and also in terms of reference or defining what a related person would mean for the purposes of this provision. Next slide, please. The other comment that we received in relation to governance matters was that the bill currently provides for ERBA to determine a policy framework for performing its function in terms of Section 4.1 with ministerial approval. And the comment was that this means that ERBA approval to proceed with the policy framework and time frame, and that the comment also proposed that there must be time frames within which such a policy must be approved by the minister. As part of considering the comment, National Treasury and ERBA then proposed some amendments to that particular provision. And the first amendment was that instead of giving the ERBA the power to determine a policy framework with the approval of the minister, that was the reference to policy was changed to allow the board or give the board the power to actually now determine or make a regulatory strategy. And the further amendment was that regulatory strategy must be made with the approval of the minister. And another important amendment is that is now a requirement that the regulatory strategy as approved by the minister must be published in the Gazette. And if there are any amendments that are made to the regulatory strategy as published in terms of that paragraph, then that must also be done in accordance with what is provided for or required under C, which means it must also be consulted with the board and it must also be published. Next slide, please. This one, there was a proposal that we keep the number of meetings of the board at a minimum of 4 p.m. So you would have noticed that in the bill that was, or the amendments that were proposed in the provisions that were contained in the Financial Matters Amendment Bill, or to reduce the number of meetings that the board may conduct per year, to, if I'm not mistaken, the proposal was to make it a maximum of two. So the proposal is now to keep the number as it is in the Act, which is to make it a minimum of four. So the response is that proposal is supported, and we're going to keep the meetings of the board at a minimum of four per year. Next slide. The next slide deals with matters raised in relation to the Smart Committee and its panels. There was clarity required by the stakeholders with regard to the composition of the Smart Committee, in addition to the auditors and legally qualified persons, and that the number of panels members must at least be three. And what you would notice in the proposed amendments is that there is now clarity to indicate that the other one third of the disciplinary committee is to be filled by the what we call other suitable qualified persons of the disciplinary committee. And importantly, is that there's a proposal that the panel should actually comprise of a minimum of three members. So at any given time, once a panel is appointed to hear a disciplinary to conduct a disciplinary hearing, that panel will have at least or a minimum of three members. Next slide, please. There was also an issue raised with regard to the seniority of the person who would be chairing the disciplinary committee. And it was stakeholders that the disciplinary chairperson of the disciplinary committee must be a retired judge or a senior legal person with more than 20 years experience. As part of the response to the comment, we then proposed that the disciplinary committee should actually be chaired by either a retired judge or a senior counsel. And the issue is always possible that you find senior legal personnel who are with more than 20 years experience would be always be available to assist with these disciplinary hearings. So that's why while supporting that the chair must be a judge or a senior counsel, we felt it may not be always be practical to find someone who is a senior legal person with more than 20 years experience would be available to assist. And we also proposed that the chairperson of the disciplinary panel must be a member of the committee who is a legally qualified member, meaning that each disciplinary panel will be chaired by a person with legal experience or a person or a member of the disciplinary committee with the legal qualification. Next slide, please. We did indicate in the previous slides on matters relating to the referral of non-audit matters to professional bodies. And stakeholders requested clarity regarding the referral of non-audit matters to professional bodies. And they basically requested that we define what a non-audit matter is in the Act. And our view is that since the word audit is defined in the Act, there is no need to define what a non-audit matter is. I mean, you could simply say anything that does not fall within the definition of an audit then can be regarded as a non-audit matter. And we therefore proposed an amendment for that the details of referral of non-audit matters should be dealt with in terms of the ERBA rules, and that any referral of a non-audit matter to a professional body must only be done if it falls within the constitution and the rules of that particular professional body. So that's the amendment that's being proposed in the bill in order to address the stakeholders' comments. Next slide. We did indicate that the bill does make provision for search and seizure during an investigation. And the stakeholders did raise concerns regarding the provisions in the bill that deal with search and seizure. And our submission is that the provisions as they currently stand are constitutionally sound. However, we do want to acknowledge and indicate to the committee that the stakeholders did identify areas for refinement, some of which we have actually now included in the proposed amendment. By way of examples, you would find now in the proposed amendments that there's a provision that deals with the necessary qualifications that would be required for a person that would be authorized to conduct search and seizure. And also, we would find a provision in the bill that requires that a person that is authorized to conduct search and seizure must at all given time be in a possession of a certificate that indicates that this person is authorized by the board to conduct the search and seizure. You would also find provisions in the bill that attempt or try to enhance protection for those persons that would be required to provide information during a search and seizure. But what you'd also find is that as part of protection, these persons would now have the right not to provide any answers which may be self-incriminating. And there's also a provision proposed that would now clarify the criteria that would be followed when a warrant is to be issued. With regard to the reconsideration of disciplinary decisions, there were a number of comments and concerns raised and requests that we should consider inserting a clause or a provision in the bill that provides or that would provide for the right to either an internal or an external appeal against disciplinary decisions. Our view as National Treasurer and ERBA is that although the bill does not make provision for internal appeal or an appeal to court against disciplinary decisions, it should be noted that the right to take these decisions for review remains available to women. We also want to indicate that the grounds for review by courts in terms of the promotion of Administrative Justice Act of 2000, commonly referred to as PAJA, our view is that these grounds are sufficiently extensive in order to offer protection to persons that may be affected by such decision. For example, you may now make an application for a review of a decision on the basis that the decision was biased, or on the basis that on the ground that the procedure that was followed in making such a decision was unfair, or the decision was based on materially was materially influenced by an error of law, or the decision was influenced by an ulterior or made for an ulterior purpose, or irrelevant considerations were considered in making such a decision, or a decision was made on bad faith or based on arbitrary or capricious considerations, or an action was not rationally connected to the purpose or information before the decision maker, or on the ground basis that an action otherwise is unconstitutional or unlawful. That is on the basis that the decision constitutes unlawful based on an unlawful action or an unconstitutional action. Next slide, please. The other comment that we received related to the determination of the maximum fine by the minister. And the proposal was that we should now make provision in the Act for the minister to determine the maximum fines. That is, for those maximum fines to be determined in the Act, and to also include factors that minister will consider, or that the disciplinary hearing will consider before sanctions. Our response to that comment is that in order to allow for flexibility, it is not desirable that the maximum amount for sanctions to be imposed should be determined in the Act. However, it is proposed in the bill that the minister should determine the maximum fines based on the recommendation of the board, and that the minister, once the maximum amount has been determined, those must be published, or actually before they are determined, the proposed fines must be published for public comment. We believe that that is transparent enough, and it allows for a consideration of different views before the maximum amounts are determined by the minister. And it should also be noted that affected individuals or registered owners that are facing disciplinary hearings would also have an opportunity to give mitigating factors, which may should be considered before a sanction is determined by the authority that would be dealing with that disciplinary. Next slide, please. There were also concerns or comments that were received with regard to the protection and disclosure of information. And one of the comments was that the bill should provide for the disclosure of information if it is in the public interest in order to combat unlawful or unethical conduct, and also to ensure appropriate, the bill should ensure appropriate protection of personal information. And the bill should also allow for the sharing of information with professional bodies in respect of referral of non-audit matters. In responding to those comments, we wish to indicate that Ereba does currently publish the names of persons that are found guilty of improper conduct. If the entity auditors was a public interest entity, and or if the respondent is a repeat offender. And for that, we want to refer the committee to the Ereba policy on sanctions, which was issued in December of 2016. And it should also be noted that Ereba as a state organ is bound by the Protection of Personal Information Act, and it has to implement that act. And the requirement to ensure compliance or adherence with the Protection of Personal Information Act is reiterated in the proposed Section 57A. The bill also proposes that the sharing of information with professional bodies in respect of non-matters should be contained. What I want to indicate is that there's also a proposal made in the bill which allows for the sharing of information with professional bodies in respect of those matters that would have been referred as non-audit matters to a professional body. I think that concludes the presentation, and I would, on behalf of Treasury and the Ereba, wish to take this opportunity to thank the committee for the opportunity to make this presentation on the Auditing Profession Amendment Bill. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mulaotsi, and also MP Van Schoor, on a very brief and clear briefing to the committee, and which was provided the background of the bill on the professional of, and also the content of the bill was very clearly outlined, and also the public submissions and responses by National Treasury. So we want to thank you very much, and we would now give to the members of the committee to make their inputs. Thank you very much.
I've got Mr. Reiter, Chair. Mr. Muletsane.
Mr. Reiter. Muletsane. Is it two hands, Mr. Reiter, Mr. Muletsane? Any further hands? Okay, let's take this round to say, Honorable Reiter.
Yeah, I will be.
Honorable Zolani Kiva. Okay, we'll take it then for this round in that order to have Honorable Reiter, and followed by Honorable Muletsane, followed by Honorable Kiva. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And yes, to all the colleagues, it's good to be back on board. Good to have some work to do for a change. I've been quite busy during the breaks, but nice to be back. Thank you very much. And thank you to the department for the presentation, which I think gives the majority of the insight. I really only have two questions or two issues of clarity. Mr. Mulaudzi, you had a slide that was labeled as 2.5. Your first point on that slide was very unclear to me, and I'm going to ask you if you can, in your response, just go back to that particular slide and give me the details or explain a little bit better, perhaps, to me, because I really didn't understand it. It was probably my issue. But the first point on that slide, which was very unclear to me, so I'm going to ask you to just revisit that particular point. The second matter relates to partly to what Honorable Karim mentioned on his way out the door this morning, relating to the IRBA and the appointment of the board and the chairperson thereof. In terms of the new act, can the department just advise us exactly what the responsibilities are of the minister in appointing the board and the chairperson, and what oversight role vests with both the portfolio committee and the select committee in terms of the appointment of the board and its members and oversight thereof? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Reiter. Just to double check, Honorable Reiter, did you give the number of the slide or numbers?
2.5 was the title, 2.5.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Honorable Muletsane.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation. Mine is not a question as such, it's a clarity. According to the Act number 26 of 2005, and also it appears on the recommendations, the minimum meetings per year is 4. So I just want to find out, these meetings are held per quota, or they are determined by the circumstances? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Muletsane. Honorable Mkiva.
Chairperson, I will be excused of not being on the camera because I'm trying to ensure that I've got a stable network, because Once you switch on the camera, it affects the speed and therefore the quality.
Except
now, let me say good morning to you, Chair, and good morning to the members as well as the officials coming from Treasury. And let me say, even though it's already February, compliments to you all, and I wish you a revolutionary year in this year, 2021. Chairperson, I welcome this presentation. Actually, this bill is a very progressive bill, clearly initiated by the ANC to ensure that we mitigate all the wrongdoing and to prevent the grand scale of corruption from happening. So it is a necessary instrument. Certainly, we're giving it thumbs up. But I just want to ask some critical questions. You see, when it comes to investigation, wherein Mr. Mulaudzi was saying that a retired judge or a counsel would then be given that to chair. That measure is being made to ensure that sometimes there's unavailability of retired judges. Hence, there is a proposal for a senior counsel. The only options that they always look at, given the fact that as a country, we also have an institution of traditional leadership that has a wealth of experience. And we've got capable traditional leaders who served in their own traditional courts and regional courts as presiding officers, and therefore have a clear understanding and depth of the constitution as well as the laws of the country. Why are we always limiting ourselves to people who are only trained in accordance with Roman, Dutch, and English laws? Why can't we begin an approach of looking at things in a very balanced way, in a manner that is transforming the landscape, and in a manner that is beginning to decolonize and start recognizing organic intellectuals, but also a wealth of experience that is drawn from indigenous knowledge system? Because it can't be right that we continue to only pursue the issue of a law as well as the issue of presiding officers only from one angle and one angle only. It doesn't reflect very good of a society like ours. So I would say that perhaps that needs to be looked at, and it needs to be inserted that where there's a capable presiding officer flowing from an indigenous or an institution of traditional leadership, that person ought to be considered. So I think that that is the intervention I wanted to make. And it may well be that it can, the same principle can apply even in other sections or recommendations that are looked at, that let us not only look from one angle when we deal with these issues. We need to open up. I mean, we go to tertiary to stretch our minds in order for us to think out of the box. We must not box ourselves and put blinkers in the manner in which we look at things. So when we make recommendations, we must understand that we are an African country through and through. It mustn't be like we just happen to be a mislocated or a dislocated country that happens to be in Africa, and yet in terms of its own fabric, we are very Eurocentric in terms of how we approach things. So I want that balance. I want to see a transformed manner in which we look at the crafting of the bills and at putting recommendations that are anchored by our understanding of our locality insofar as our cultural outlook is concerned. Because education that flies above the heads of the people is also problematic in that sense. So I'm saying that, yes, we're not talking about education here, but we're talking about a lawmaking exercise. and we're coming up with recommendations which are intended to deal with issues that are affecting our communities right here in Africa, in South Africa in particular. And therefore, when we look at things, we ought to look at them in that balanced way. Once again, Chair, I want to thank the presenters for the good presentation, which, as I said, is revolutionary in itself. It is progressive. It is going to help us to prevent going forward all these things that we have witnessed in the recent past. And therefore, going forward, it will be a very, very useful and a valuable tool to deal with those matters. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ryder, Honorable Molatsane, Honorable Mkiva. Now, we will then for this round give an opportunity to the presenters to give clarity and respond on the matters raised. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Elwe, will you start with the first question from Mr. Ryder?
Yes, I'll do that. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to deal with the question by Mr. Ryder. It's 2.5 of the slide, which is slide 12, dealing with the reporting of irregularities. In trying to clarify that issue, what the slide is talking to there is with regard to the fact that when auditors are conducting audits, it does happen that they come across certain irregularities of which they have an obligation to report to IRBA. And as you can imagine, it may be an irregularity that basically points to wrongdoing by a firm in which that auditor is employed. And because they have an obligation to report, it might happen that, or maybe inevitable, that the firm feels that it will be best if that particular auditor who discovered that irregularity that must be audited, then that particular firm decides to remove that auditor from that particular audit. So what the bill is proposing is that there must be a prohibition on the removal of that particular auditor until such time that the reporting process of the irregularity is completed. And I think it's for obvious reasons. To ensure that whatever the irregularity may have happened or may have been identified is brought to the attention, to ensure that it's brought to the attention of IRBA, and that it must actually be dealt with. Because if the firm is allowed to remove that auditor, there is a big chance that matter may never see the light of day. And that's what the slide is dealing with. And apart from the auditor being removed by the firm, there is also a possibility that an auditor may have found other opportunities somewhere and decide to resign from that particular firm. So what we're proposing is that if that happens, and as you know, resignation is a voluntary action. You can't stop anyone from resigning. But at least what we're proposing is that if that auditor resigns from the firm before the reporting process is complied with fully, at least there is a requirement that that auditor is obliged to do the necessary handover to whoever the incoming auditor would be. So what we're basically saying in simple terms is that yes, you can resign, but before you resign, at least do a handover of that reporting to whoever the incoming auditor or that particular auditor would be. I hope that clarifies 2.5. Thank you very much. Unless if colleagues also want to add what I've just indicated. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, I'm just going to deal with the second question of Mr. Ryder about the requirements of regarding the role of the minister on the appointment of the board. We're not proposing any amendments in respect of the current power of the minister to appoint, but there are provisions in the amendment bill regarding the constitution of the board or the composition. And that's to ensure independence from the auditing profession and also to have some minimum requirements as to formally resident auditors, that there should be at least two, and also that there should be at least two advocates or attorneys, and then we indicate or propose the years of experience. And then also there's requirements regarding non-sharing in profits with certain exceptions. So there's no changes proposed in the bill that's before the committee now. I'll just briefly deal with the next question as to from Mr. Molotsane. The current acts say the board must meet at least four times a year, without saying it should be every quarter. We did propose in the bill that was tabled that it should be only two times, and given the comment we received during the from stakeholders that's two times a year too little, it was changed back to four meetings per year, which was adopted by Karen Marie, who's acting accountant general and also did serve on the board, may want to add, and may be in practice, how often they meet, Karen.
Thank you, MP. Yeah, I think twice was definitely not adequate enough. This board also has a number of subcommittees that feeds into the main board. But previous history has shown that four times is adequate. And then, of course, there is still provision for the special meetings of the board where they can deal with any other matters. So I do think that the provisions we have is adequate at this stage.
You deal with the last question from Mr. Mkiva.
Thank you, MP. And thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Mkiva, for the question. And I must indicate that I was actually challenged by the issues that you raised. And I got a bit worried that you actually raising issues that we somehow not necessarily ignore, but we find ourselves in a situation where we end up not maybe thinking that there are other skills somewhere else other than where we traditionally source our skills, especially when it comes to investigations and conducting of disciplinary hearings. Yes, you are correct. There are skills out there. I mean, traditional leaders do deal with issues of discipline and resolution of matters in their committees on a daily basis. And I do agree that we do need to take that into account and ensure that we also harness in those skills. But I do want to refer and I'll deal with two issues or two processes. The issue relating to the disciplinary committee and its composition and the investigating committee. The Honourable Mkiva was worried about the emphasis on the chairing of the, I think he made mention of the investigating committee, but I think he wanted to refer to the disciplinary committee, where we did indicate in the presentation that the proposal is that the disciplinary committee should be chaired by either a retired judge or a senior counsel. And I must indicate that only relates to the chairing of the committee itself, but it does not limit the composition or the appointment of members into either the disciplinary committee or the investigating committee of members or persons who do not necessarily have the legal qualifications. And starting with the investigating committee, and to deal with its composition. I would want to refer the committee to proposed clause 8, which is section 24, which basically says the investigating committee referred to insection dependent of the auditing profession and include two persons with at least 10 years experience in auditing and an advocate or attorney with at least 10 years experience in practicing law. So as you can see, there is allowance that the investigating committee would have other persons with different skills other than auditing and law. And that's just on the investigating committee, which means if there are skills in other disciplines, there is provision for such to be included in the investigating committee. With regard to the disciplinary committee, I would want to refer the committee to clause 9, which is proposed section 24A of the Act. And 24A1, in terms of the composition of the board, provides 24A, subsection 1, provides that the regulatory board must appoint a disciplinary committee referred to in section 22F, whose members are independent of the auditing profession, consisting of as many competent members as it may determine necessary to deal with disciplinary hearings in terms of the same. So again, as you can see, there is allowance in the bill, in the proposed amendment, for the disciplinary committee to be comprised as many people with whatever skills, as long as these persons are independent of the auditing profession. And I'm hoping that in these appointments, consideration of what Honorable Kiva has raised will also be taken into account. So as I indicated in the presentation, the only limitation in terms of the particular skills that would be required for a particular member is in relation to the chairing of the committee itself. Remember, I indicated that there will be a disciplinary committee, but for each hearing, then you would have panels. So the limitation, as I'm indicating now, is with regard to the chairing of this broad committee, what we call the disciplinary committee. And the proposal is that it must be chaired by a person who is a retired judge or senior counsel. And this is not to suggest by any stroke of imagination that you may not have other people from other disciplines who may have the necessary skills to chair a disciplinary committee. And I think that's maybe an issue that should be considered or maybe be debated going forward. But as it is now, the only proposal that is made in terms of specifying that it must be either a retired judge or a senior counsel, it's only in relation to the chairing of the committee itself. It's also an issue that we may want to take up, taking into account what Honorable Mkiva has indicated to us. And thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much to the presenters for clarities and from the points raised by the members. We will then take a second round. If there are any further hands, Nkululeko, this meeting was scheduled for until 12:30. It's now 11 o'clock. We will then give another round for any further questions, clarities, inputs. Are there any hands, Kulego?
Mr. Chair, I've got Mr. Ryder.
Okay, Mr. Ryder, any further hands?
I think that's him for now.
Okay, Honorable Ryder.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Ms. Francois, thank you for your answer. Although you replied to my question, you didn't really answer it. And maybe I need to be a little bit more explicit in the way I pose the question. So if you can just explain to us the current process. So I understand that, that there's a process whereby a board gets appointed for IRBA. And my question is, in terms of the existing process and in terms of the new legislation, perhaps you can just guide us and tell us who holds what responsibility. Sorry, I beg your pardon. That's an unfair question. So what is the minister's responsibility and what level of oversight is given to the portfolio committee and to the select committee in terms of the appointment of the board and the chairperson? So if you can just tell us, you answered in terms of the new legislation, you said no changes are proposed. In terms of the existing legislation, perhaps you can just guide us through and tell us who holds the power of appointment and where the oversight role lies. Chair, if I may, I think that I was intrigued by Mr. Nkiba's question. And noting that this is a Section 75 bill, and I think that the amendment would probably, or any changes would not really be encouraged at this stage in terms of it being a 75 bill. But certainly I think that a private member's bill is perhaps worth considering, if not in terms of Mr. Munoudzi's response on the auditing professions bill, on other bills. And I think that perhaps Mr. Nkiba should investigate the possibility of a private member's bill. That's just me thinking aloud and thinking that it is something that might be worth considering. Thank you, Chair. You are muted, Chair.
Thank you. Before we get the responses, are there any further hands?
No, Chairperson.
No further hands? Okay, maybe have then a respond.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, sorry, I didn't elaborate on the exact process. The power to appoint vests in the minister. And there's a process of gazetting for nominations. But in terms of the provisions, there's no role for any parliamentary committee in the appointment process in terms of the current act or in the proposed act. And so it's a process of seeking nominations through gazetting and in newspapers. And thereupon, the minister make a decision on the appointments and generally the practice is also to submit it to cabinet for approval. Thank you. I hope it clarifies the question asked by Mr. Ryder.
Thank you very much, MP. Any further hands? Questions? Hello?
Yeah, is Gabriel Alendo, Mdakanjad.
Yakuva Ngwasyan. Can you hear me, members? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you, Chair.
Okay, okay. I've got a slightly challenge here on my side. If you can hear me, I will keep it like that. Thank you very much, members. For the last time, are there any further questions? Any further inputs? Okay, in the absence of any further questions and inputs, we believe that
Sorry, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Come in.
Can I just ask the presenters if this bill is already available in the other official languages? If they do, I would like them to email me the Xhosa version as well as the Sepedi version after this sitting.
Thank you, Honorable Kiva. Are there any comment on that from the presenters? Any comment from the presenters? Uh, Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you. You can come in.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to ask Elway to indicate what's the second text of the act as it was passed in 2005. I can't recall now. Unfortunately, it's only available in that language, and then the amendments that we are now proposing will be translated, or actually has already been translated, I think. So we'll check the text. But Elway, can you recall what's the second language or the other language?
You caught me a bit off guard. I can quickly check. Maybe before the meeting ends, I would have confirmed that. Then I'll come back to indicate to the chair.
Okay, but whatever is available, we'll email to the committee secretary then.
Yes.
For circulation to the committee.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think that is good that we'll, if that can be done to email to the committee members the request that was made by Honorable Mkiva. So I think on that note, Elroy Mahankuleko, is there anything else before we say that we had a very good briefing from National Treasury on this bill and also in terms of a way forward?
It was
yes.
Nothing, Chair, on my side, other than the announcement that we're having public hearing on the bill next Tuesday.
Okay. All right. That is then fine. Members, let me use this opportunity to thank all the members of the committee and also to thank the team who have given us the briefing and presentations, so which we believe was very informative. And then it definitely, as Honorable Mkiva has said, that this is a tool that will be effectively used to make sure that we deal with the matter of corruption and all those type of things, that we have an effective tool to do those things. So on behalf of the committee, on behalf of the chairperson, Honorable Yunus, that we want to thank you very, very much, all the members and the team, and to say that this meeting is then adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Keep well.
Thank you.